Hello, Courtney.
Hello, Jim. How are you today?
I'm okay. Actually, I'm a little hyper, maybe. I don't know. I saw
I think
this.
it's the chocolate you've been eating.
Oh, Brookside chocolate is so delicious.
Shout out to Brookside.
That's right, Brookside. I saw this movie right before we got on. It's an old movie. Starring the late great Jerry Lewis, called The Nutty Professor.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, he took like, for those who don't know, the movie's about this guy. He's a scientist and he's like a really a nerd guy with glasses, and then he takes this potion and he turns into like Sean Connery, Mr. Bond,
Mr. Cool.
Mr. Cool, Mr. Suave, right? And I thought, man, if that was real, I wonder if I could take that, then I would be like Mr. Suave, like Jim Stroud, Jim Stroud.
You're already Mr. Suave.
Well, that's what I tell myself. And that's $20 I owe you for that. But for the rest of the world, I don't know if they will see it that way. I wonder if our next guest could develop a potion like that for me. He's pretty
Is pretty
smart.
smart. Jinx.
Let me read his bio so people will know how smart this guy is. So his name is Ken Silber. And Ken is a senior channel account manager at the Predictive Index, the talent optimization leader with 25 years of sales, marketing, partnership, and talent optimization expertise. He leads a team of partner activation managers and specialists who work directly with PI certified partners to help them realize their full potential. Ken lives in the Chicago area with his wife, two girls, and a labradoodle. In his free time, he's an avid skier, poker player, and certified soccer coach, and also a really smart guy. But I guess they'll sort of pick up on that when they listen to the interview.
That's right. I'm looking
So,
forward to it. Ken's a great guy.
woohoo! Potion number nine coming up after this. Listening to Tribe Pod, a podcast series of interviews of interest to the HR community. It is hosted by Courtney Lane, produced by Jim Stroud, sponsored by Proactive Talent, and enjoyed by you. Today's episode begins right after this.
On-demand recruiting is an hourly service that we offer where our recruiters work as an extension of your business, helping to fill your positions by finding top talent.
So on-demand recruiting is there to address issues in hiring when a company is experiencing a lot of growth, when they're having some seasonality changes where they may temporarily need to expand their recruiting team. You maybe have a new line of business or a space where you're expanding your business and you need to bring in specialty expertise to help fill those niche roles that your internal team may not yet be ramped up on.
Proactive Talent's on-demand recruiting solution is quite different from a lot of the other models that you're going to see in the workplace. Whereas you're going to pay a contingency recruiting firm, typically on average around 20%, sometimes up to 30% of the first year salary of the person that you hire. And in that same period of time, you'll spend less than a quarter of that with Proactive Talent's managed on-demand.
For more information on Proactive Talent, visit them online at proactivetalent.com or click the link in the podcast description.
Today, I'm joined by Ken Silber from the Predictive Index, the world's leading talent optimization platform. Now, before we jump into the conversation, I do want to note, in the spirit of full transparency, that we at Proactive Talent are a certified partner of the Predictive Index. We use this tool internally within our own team, as well as supporting clients leverage the tools within their teams. That being said, very excited to have Ken here with us. So, Ken, thank you for joining us. Just to start off, for those that are listening who don't know what the Predictive Index is, can you just give us an introduction, high level?
Yeah, thanks, Courtney. I'm really excited to join you here today and have this conversation with you. So, Predictive Index, for those of you that aren't aware, we're a talent optimization company. And so what we do is we help organizations create a more comprehensive talent strategy that either is derived from or ties back to the business strategy at the organization level, at the team level. So in a nutshell, when people ask you what we do, that's typically how I would describe it. And we use science and we use data to help provide insights that are otherwise typically not available to most organizations when it comes to those regular discussions about how do we use talent to make sure that we hit our objectives.
Yeah. What I love personally about the sort of approach of talent optimization, because I think when I was first introduced to Predictive Index, my assumption was that it was a hiring assessment. And that is a very small piece of what the Predictive Index is, but it truly is a tool to help you assess talent throughout its journey within your organization, from the point of candidate to even, engagement and even ultimately exiting. And so I think, it's what I enjoy about it is it really becomes a resource for the full life cycle of people within the organization and tying them back, like you said, to that business strategy.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of folks are either aware of Predictive Index from our use within hiring, but that is just, to your point, just a small part of how we make sure that we continue to leverage those insights about people, both in how we design teams, how we bring people into teams, how we coach based on what we know about people's strengths and what we know about the areas where they might need to stretch a little bit. And certainly, as we follow them along across that employee life cycle, talent optimization becomes, more of something that you focus on continuously improving, and something that you're a continuous part of how you approach everyday decisions. It just becomes naturally a part of what you do. When you do it well, that's when the magic happens. If you're only doing it in hiring, right, you're only getting a small, which is good. Like, it's great that if you're only using a tool to make sure from a fit standpoint you're bringing in the right folks. But there's so much more application of those insights beyond just the hiring decision.
Yeah, absolutely. But with that being said, I do want to sort of focus our conversation initially to one piece of the hiring piece in particular, because, starting back in the late spring and early summer, when there was really a growing sort of unrest following the death of George Floyd, and we started seeing more and more companies, sort of put themselves forward and proactively start to embrace the idea, or at least take a stronger stance, if you will, on pro-diversity and really talking about how that was a leading priority within their organizations. And diversity has been a topic that's been around for a really long time, so that's not new, but there was just some new energy underneath it that I think we hadn't really felt in at that degree for a while. And I'm wondering, were you all feeling that on your side? Are we seeing, either from the Predictive Index perspective or even just from a broader industry perspective, that more and more organizations are looking for tools to help them really operationalize these initiatives around diversity and inclusion?
They are, and we are definitely seeing a shift, as you described. It's unfortunate that it took events like the ones that you described to help this maybe become more of a focus for our, at the organizational level, at the country level. I guess one positive aspect of it is it has forced organizations to not just check the box when it comes to this, to actually now start to have some conversations that maybe they should have already been having in some cases where they were potentially already had initiatives in place, a real push to maybe accelerate some of those initiatives. For most organizations, it was an opportunity to maybe kind of level set and use technology to understand, even look at the data to understand, like, where are we at now at an organization? Where are our teams at? Where is, so that you could come to those conversations and be a little bit more informed. In general, as it relates, I think, to the PI software specifically, a much greater focus on using the tools to better understand the strengths of the team. And we all were hit by the civil unrest, and then by, you know, even COVID following. It's been a year of change, fear, uncertainty, new teams, new leaders, everybody remote. And so it's been really great to see how understanding strengths at the individual level, at the team level, and celebrating those and recognizing differences across team members, how the software and how the tools and how your expertise as, you know, as a PI certified partner, how we help make that come to life for organizations to solve you know, what they're facing in their situation, which is so very different, being able to, you know, create a better team dynamic is, you know, never been so important. So it's really great to see kind of a shift in that direction, much more inclusive. We've always, you know, tried to focus on the inclusive aspect of how you use the tools, but it's great to see more and more organizations embracing that.
So, can you describe a little bit how, in particular, I'm thinking in the hiring piece of the platform, like how the tool does help from a diversity perspective? I mean, what is it that it's doing to really encourage teams or leaders to make hiring decisions, you know, in such a way that it you know, embodies some of those diversity and inclusion initiatives?
Yeah, a couple things come to mind. So, you know, first off, there are, beyond maybe what I think most folks know about some of our tools, we have a tool called the job assessment that really allows the different perspectives, like a very diverse mix of perspectives, to provide their thoughts and their insights into what is really important in this role. Which really helps shift the focus as a team around what do we, you know, what kinds of strengths do we need to be successful in this environment, and mm-hmm. Where maybe people aren't as strong, how do we understand, how do we coach, how do we develop, how do we, you know, help people grow when we bring them into the organization or if they're already on the team. It helps focus on the things that matter the most. So I'm seeing a lot of organizations kind of revisit some of the criteria that they used to select today. And while there are certain roles where like an education requirement or certification or specific skill is very important, in some roles, you know, that may not be as important, or maybe even the you know, if a particular degree is required, you know, I think hiring managers in general historically have maybe unconsciously maybe fallen into the trap of certain universities, certain prestige, and the reality of it is those aren't always, and you know, as accessible for everyone, and including that as a requirement. You know, the result of that is your maybe screening out folks who otherwise would be amazing contributors to your team and to your organization. So it's really great to see more and more organizations kind of revisiting maybe some older criteria that's maybe been in place for a little while and as I mentioned earlier, unfortunately, it took maybe some of these events to bring that to light, really refreshing to see how folks are embracing it.
Yeah. And I think it, one of the big values in these kinds of conversations, whether it's the predictive index or any other tool, and or sort of just in having the conversation in general, is what you said there around the refocusing of what's really important. Because I think sort of the heyday of the bullet list of very static, specific, you know, and rather sort of generic at the same time, expectations and requirements of a job role, you know, we're being challenged to say, yeah, does that really matter? Or is that potentially unconsciously, but in reality, creating, you know, a marginalized portion of, you know, the population to be excluded from ever even getting far enough in conversation to be, you know, really considered as they should be. Because, you know, education is a perfect example. For years, high school diploma required or college degree required. And it's like, is it? Is there something special about a high school diploma or a college degree in this particular role that means if I don't have it, or if I don't have it from a certain echelon of school, that therefore I'm incapable of performing the duties as assigned? And even that layer, particularly with predictive index, of adding that team dynamic, because when you've got a team of individuals that are collectively working towards a goal together, me not being as strong in one particular bucket may not matter as much because I've got a person that's on that team balancing with me, that they've got a good strength here, but I'm, my strengths are sort of making up for what they have. And it, you know, it's sort of forcing people to, I think, to take a step back and look more holistically at what they're trying to do and the people that are doing it and create some, you know, more agility, which I think we've been forced in 2020 to reckon with, is that we all have to figure out how to be more agile teams, work with fewer people to get really sometimes more done, both from a diversity, but just in general, as we've sort of gone through the pains of the pandemic this year. And, you know, sort of following from that, I think that we all know that getting past that unconscious piece of it is just really, it's a lot easier said than done. And, you know, from your experience, Ken, and sort of what you all see on your side and the science and the data around this, you know, what effect does unconscious bias really have on the hiring process? I mean, why is that something people should even take time to think about and digest and figure out how to sort of navigate beyond?
Let me see if I can answer that in a way. So I'm going to get to your answer on that.
Okay.
And so one thing that I see with hiring managers in general is they tend to, you know, unconsciously gravitate to people that are more like themselves. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a good, reasonable example that I think most people can associate. Unfortunately, when you do that, it results in not having that diversity that is so vitally important. And the same applies to hiring situations. It actually even applies for post-hire. So let's say you've hired somebody, you tend to give opportunities to folks maybe on your team unconsciously that are more like you. And so that's something that, you know, we want to avoid. Another example, you know, in walks two candidates, hopefully in person at some point in the future, but on Zoom, it can happen now. One has a neck tattoo and one doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, it's there's tons of research around this. Mm-hmm. And in terms of how this affects the decisions we make about people, again, unconsciously. So if we're not careful, it can really limit our ability to be successful. A few other examples: perceptions of ethnicity based on somebody's name that you might see on a resume or on a LinkedIn profile, a picture, what school they went to. We talked about that a little bit already. Your voice. So many of these things factor in unconsciously to how we quickly, you know, make decisions about people. And so I guess I'll use PI as an example. On the flip side of that, you know, I work with a ton of folks who have tattoos, piercings, and a ton of folks who don't. And I can't think about how many great performers and valuable team members that bring such unique perspectives that we'd be missing out on if we allowed, you know, in our organization, those unconscious biases to take effect. So in general, I think, you know, your question was like, what is Why is it so important? I think it has to do with making sure that we're focusing on what is so vitally important in people in terms of where they can contribute, what naturally gets them excited, gets them motivated, tap into those passions. We like to call it their superpowers. Mm-hmm. And that's really what this is all about, focusing on what matters most. And using the data about what people really care about, what drives them, rather than focusing on things that really don't end up ultimately predicting success and don't result in the kind of performance that we need.
And I love that last piece that you said right there as sort of a jumping off point to my next question. When you talk about predicting success, because I think we talk a lot about, you know, you hear in the recruiting space quite a bit that like the best predictor of, you know, future behavior is historical behavior. And I think people tend to sort of immediately internalize that in a very concrete way. I know I do this. It's why we ask behavioral questions and interviews and things like that. But really assessments like the behavioral assessments that Predictive Index does is taking it a little bit deeper than that from a person perspective than just what did I do in like XYZ situation, and sort of, I think applying it a little bit, I'm struggling for the right word, is sort of like broadly, but at the same time, very sort of personal to that person. So, I mean, I guess help me here, sort of just walk through a little bit what the behavioral assessment is and what it's really capturing so that it can help leaders as they're going through hiring process, or even internally, like when they're thinking about internal mobility and who they want to, you know, consider for a particular promotion or for, you know, new roles, like what the behavioral assessment is telling them about a person that's helping them predict the success of that person.
Yeah, it's like in I guess simpler terms, it's really about making sure or understanding how people think, how they communicate, how they take action. What are the things that they're naturally strong at? Mm-hmm. And if you can line the work up or align the work to things that you're super passionate about, that you're naturally strong at, and that's, you know, the majority of what you're doing, you're going to be more engaged, you're going to be more productive, you're going to enjoy your job more than you would if you're doing things that are more of a stretch for you. Mm-hmm. I'll pick on myself as an example. I'm not naturally strong at the details. I have to do them, right? It doesn't mean that I can't do them. Doesn't mean that I'm not capable of managing the details. And I've, over the years, developed a number of different compensating frameworks, I'll call them, to make sure that, you know, that that's not a challenge for me. But if my role was to constantly have to create, like, I don't know, step-by-step instruction manuals to help a partner like you learn how to best integrate PI. You know, it was just, I could probably do it, but it wouldn't be the kind of work that I'd get excited about and ultimately would probably lead to lower engagement, lower productivity. And if that really was my case, I mean, I wouldn't probably be in that position for very long. I would need to seek something out. So, you know, I hope that story about myself helps kind of highlight how you use this information, because people are amazing. People can stretch. They can do wonderful and amazing things. But if that's what we're asking you to do all day long, that's pretty taxing.
Yeah.
And so that's the idea of how do you use this data and these insights to make better decisions about how you line up teams, how you line up work.
Oh, yeah.
How you motivate, how you coach.
I'll use myself as an example. I'll see yourself as example and I'll share mine too. You know, I am. An adapter. I'm very comfortable in this sort of flexible, ever-changing kind of space. And as a consultant, that does me very well because I can work with a bunch of different clients and I can sort of get a read for who they are and how they work and how they communicate. And I can sort of fit myself into that space so that I feel like an extension of who they are and what they're doing in a really natural way. It's great in my role today.
it was not as great in, you know, when I was in an in-house setting and I was in a very static kind of role and I wasn't getting to sort of pull into that flexibility space that I enjoyed and or am natural at. I don't even know that I was necessarily aware of how much I enjoyed it, but I was natural in, you know, and so it helps to sort of have that awareness of, you know, yes, I can do this, but I actually thrive when there's this kind of space here and when I can pull on these strengths versus just kind of sit, you know, in a more sort of, I guess, complacent, you know, or in, you know, kind of space. So I think you're right. It's that balance of skill set, but also, you know, sort of what your natural leanings and who you are and how you like to go about your work that can then help you go from like an average performer to maybe a stronger performer because you're passionate about it, because you're excited about what you're doing.
Yeah. And I think it plays into our mission very well. So it's easy for me to get behind in terms of better work, better world. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that truly is our North Star. And you know, I see it firsthand every day in working with folks who, you know, are in roles that really tap into their strengths. And our hope is that when they go home at night or when they go out of their office into their home at night,
turn the camera off.
Yeah, that they, you know, that they maybe, especially now, spend a little bit more time with their kids, maybe working on homework. You know, and they're just in a better spirit in general, and are refreshed and, you know, excited to contribute on a regular basis because it's the kind of work that they really enjoy doing, you know, to the best, you know, every role. You know, I also don't want to create the expectation that like every role, you know, there are things that we probably aren't as naturally aligned to. And it's not about, you know, making sure that people are 100% perfect fit for any role. It's really helping, you know, understand where they're not a fit, having that self-awareness so that they can, you know, effectively not let that get in the way at the individual level or at the team level.
Right. And that's when it goes beyond just a hiring thing, because it's actually providing information to me as a manager to look at this individual and say, here's what I know about them. And for this role, I need somebody to be able to, you know, have a strong executive presence. But I know about this person from their behavioral assessment that that's not a space that's maybe as natural to them. So I'm going to spend time developing them in that space and encouraging them and giving them opportunities to grow that skill. And so you're really armed as a manager to go into this relationship with a new person on your team and help them grow in the spaces they want to grow in, that they may need to grow in to really be successful in the line of work that they have, you know, chosen to take on as their career path. And I know how to better approach those scenarios versus just sort of what my assumptions may be, you know, whether from unconscious bias or just, well, they've always done these kinds of roles. So clearly they are just naturally good at that and like it. Whereas, you know, it may constantly be a place where they feel like they have to really push themselves to show up. And yes, they've been able to check that box in their career, but it's never come natural to them. And so having that awareness as a manager, both at the individual level and at the team level, to know like my team may have sort of a blind spot here. So I need to prepare for that as we are approaching the coming year and we have goals in front of us. How do we mitigate that? How do we navigate that? Which sort of leads me back, you know, when we were talking in the very opening and you were talking about the business strategy piece of it. And I think that's a key piece I want to make sure we chat about is that, you know, as companies are looking inward at their employee population, in particular, when they think about their diversity and inclusion and really creating an equitable workplace, you know, they're having to understand things outside of just hiring. They're having to try and put together this bigger puzzle of the company culture and think about their strategy and business objectives. And so I'm curious for executive leaders, as they start to look into 2021 and what they want
the organizational culture to look like in order to drive those business outcomes? You know, what are some of the key things from your perspective that executives need to really have front of mind that they're thinking about as they prepare for 2021?
So I think it starts with a similar awareness of the leadership dynamics today. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes leadership teams lack the diversity, mm-hmm. which means they also lack the perspectives of those marginalized groups. They're either often absent or underrepresented. So I think many of the things that we talked about already, I think, apply certainly at the leadership level, because that's really what sets the tone, sets the organizational culture. So I think, but like looking internally first, having those, creating that awareness and having the discussions about what that means, and then helping maybe fill those, figuring out how are we going to include those additional perspectives. Mm-hmm. And then I think beyond that, I think it's something that needs to be resourced. Should be on the roadmap, mm-hmm. Should be part of the regular conversation, because if it's not, unfortunately, my fear is that organizations will forget about it.
Yeah.
It's not what the employees are going to want to have happen. I think it just needs to be an ongoing part of the conversation, and it's going to take a long time. And we have, you know, hundreds of years that we need to overcome. Mm-hmm. And so it's not going to happen, in a short period of time. It becomes, something that's very important, I think, to most folks that we need to continue to focus on. So I guess my recommendation would be to make it a priority, figure out how you're going to resource it, don't lose sight of it. And have a reasonable plan. You know, if it's, you also need to perform your business objectives as well. As long as we're continuing to make progress to this, as long as we're continuing to have the conversations that I feel that we're having more and more often, that are so important, that are so easy to gloss over, mm-hmm. I feel encouraged by that. And so that, I guess, that would be my recommendation.
For companies that have maybe not yet put this at the forefront, or maybe they're not really sure or completely bought into why diversity inclusion needs to be a part of the conversation, is there data that supports actually the benefit beyond just it's the right thing to do kind of, you know, perspective? Is there actual data that says, hey, companies that have a more diverse, inclusive workforce or workplace see these kinds of results, and that alone, regardless of it being maybe the right thing to do, should you tell you as a business leader it's the right thing to, you know, consider and explore and adopt?
Yeah, and it certainly is the right thing to do morally, socially. Mm-hmm. We have that responsibility, but you ask an interesting question in terms of getting at the actual value or the business value. And making a case for diversity, mm-hmm. Which I think is a little unsettling, like when you think about it, as it commoditizes people.
Right.
And that's exactly what we're trying not to do or get hung up on. But to answer your question, yes, in fact, the research does show that organizations who have embraced diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives are having better business outcomes. But I would sure hate to be that the reason. I'd hate that for that to be the reason why organizations are doing it, because I think that kind of flies in the face of what we really need.
Yeah. No, I agree. I just think there's a lot of rhetoric out there that implies that it's more of an issue for the sake of being an issue versus it actually meaning anything. And so I ask the question from the perspective of, you know, for those who are sitting on the fence or think it's just something that people are chatting about on the Twitters, you know, that there is evidence out there that in fact there is evidence that shows that having a more diverse workplace is actually going to create better outcomes from a business perspective, from an organizational perspective, from a culture, from an engagement perspective, that there is a positive output that comes from taking that perspective that can be seen and felt.
Yeah, and there definitely there is, and I can even speak firsthand from the environment that I'm in every day. It's so refreshing to be in an environment where the different perspectives are heavily encouraged, and there's a space that's created for that. And I don't want to say that we're doing things perfectly at PI, because I think even these more recent events have uncovered opportunities that maybe we weren't aware of, or maybe we as well can learn from. So I'm excited to see some of the things that we have, some of the steps we've taken already as an organization, and how much of a priority we've put around this, and how much listening our leadership team and how much time they spent. I mean, they literally went on a listening tour and made sure to capture the perspectives of everybody so that we make sure that we do this right for our organization. It's been very exciting to be a part of that. The outcome is, we have teams that are crushing it. It's really great to see. And it's great to see how I think even being remote has created some easier opportunities for maybe folks that have a harder time getting and being heard. I think that's also helped make it easier to capture the different perspectives, because you have a different dynamic than you've had before.
I agree with that. I think the remote piece, even outside of like the internal workings, is going to be a really great driver in this space for companies and give them opportunities to really take some of those initiatives that may have felt like sort of lofty goals and really bring them to life. I think about, I know of a company that previously, pre-pandemic, sort of had a pretty highly protected sort of no remote policy, which limited their talent to the space in which they geographically were located. And now the pandemic has forced them to not be in that space, and they have fully now adopted remote. And now they are getting to hire in communities and populations that they previously excluded, maybe as a byproduct of where they geographically were located, but excluded nonetheless. And now they're able to say, whoa, we get to go and recruit in areas we never got to recruit before, and bring in talent from areas we never brought talent in from before, because we were so set on being sort of geographically here. And now we've got the whole US and we can really open it up. So I think remote will have a great impact in driving that, both internally creating opportunities for conversations that maybe didn't exist before, like you were speaking of, but also from that sort of broader external picture of being able to grow our teams in a way that we've never grown them before.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think that's one of the more positive aspects of what we've all experienced recently. And a lot of the misnomers, a lot of the, like even internally, I know our head of sales was like, prior to his whole team going remote, felt very strongly that there, with his specific team, like that just would not work. And he's the first one that would stand up and tell you that, in fact, his team has produced at a much higher level than ever before. So at PI, we've lifted those geography-based requirements, and it has unlocked, a world of new potential that allows us to make sure that we're accessing talent that we otherwise might not have the ability to easily reach as we build out our teams.
It's been a year, but I think there are some I think there are some positives, some some topics and some dynamics that were really forced to the front for people to sort of reconcile with. And I think there will be some positive outcomes that come from all of 2020 on the other side of it. But before we wrap up, want to give you, Ken, a chance. Any last thoughts that you would want to share, you know, as a part of this conversation?
No, this has really been wonderful. I appreciate you having me. I hope this has been valuable for your audience. If I was going to leave everybody with one last thought, it would be, you know, when we get through this current period of, I don't even know what to call it, let's call it 2020. I hope we don't fall back into the trap of forgetting the learnings that we've gotten this year, because I think it'll be too easy for us to get back into maybe some old habits. I would encourage us all to make sure that it doesn't happen, because I think if we all do that, we'll continue to make the progress that we sorely need.
I think that's a great place to end this conversation on. Thank you, Ken. And if anyone is interested in learning more about the Predictive Index, as I noted earlier, we are certified partners. So please feel free this time to reach out to me directly. Usually I'm passing that off to somebody else, but reach out to me. You can reach out to me via LinkedIn. You can reach out to me via email. My email is courtney@proactivetalent.com. You can shoot us a note through the website. There's plenty of ways to contact me. And I'd be happy to tell you about what our experience has been with Predictive Index within our own internal team, talk to you about some of the work that's being done with clients and really just show you around or answer your questions and let you sort of get a sneak peek of what it's all about. But I hope everybody's enjoyed our conversation today. I know I have. Ken, thank you so much again for joining us. And with that, wish you all a great day. And until next time, make it a good one.
So the name is Silber, Ken Silber. He reminds me of one of these geniuses who is like super, super smart, but has like his own little foibles or something. Like it's a couple of things that may be a little off, but that's because he's such a smart guy.
I think he's an incredibly smart guy. Yeah.
I hope that comes out as a compliment when he hears his podcast.
And that's a compliment.
Yeah, he's like super smart. Like, wow, that's the kind of guy you want working for you.
Yeah, Ken is a great partner for us to have. We are a certified partner with Predictive Index, and he is the guy that I get to work with every couple of weeks. Me and my team get to work with him, and he has really been an incredible resource. I was so excited when he agreed to come on the podcast, because that's not his typical space. You were watching him stretch there in that, or hearing him stretch in that podcast and coming on and being a part of it. But it was a great conversation because he is very smart and just gets it. So,
yeah. What do you think was your favorite part of the conversation from your standpoint?
I don't know. I guess for me, like I appreciated that he pushed back a little bit there at the end when I was asking him about, like, is there data that shows that, you know, sort of focusing on diversity has positive outcomes. And I love that he pushed back and said, yeah, there is. But at the end of the day, it's just the right thing to do. And I think that's an important stance. You know, that was a hard question for me to even sort of write down to ask. But I wanted to ask it because, like I said, I feel like there are people who sort of don't totally get that it's just the right thing to do and want, you know, data. I love that he pushed back on that. And he said, yeah, there is data, but more importantly, it's the right thing to do.
Interesting. Maybe that's we should do more of those hard-hitting interview questions.
Hard-hitting journalism.
The hard-hitting journalism. What do you think, dear listener? If you would, please send us your questions or comments about this episode or any previous episode. We stand by ready to receive what you have to say. Please email us at tripod, that's TRIBEPOD, @proactivetalent.com. Operators are standing by. So until next time, I'm going to say bye-bye. Courtney, what do you have to say?
Au revoir.
Ooh, fancy, fancy.